This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Jay joins us right now. And so, Jay, let's first of all, how you doing? Hope all's well.
I'm doing good, Alan. How you doing, brother?
Appreciate you having I'm good. Appreciate having you on, as always.
Oh, man, always a pleasure. You know I love your show.
Appreciate you. And I can't wait to know. We'll be all part of that national lineup coming up soon, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, congrats, man.
My man.
I'm sorry I didn't congratulate you before. You know, my
no, mom, don't need to. You guys, when we were there, you're the ones that were like calling it like it's going to happen. We were like, what? You guys were calling it like it's going to happen. So,
exactly.
Anyways, the James Harden stuff, though, has started out as a bit of like a murmur and a little bit of a whisper, and it's now, it's a loud scream. Like, he is basically letting the Rockets know that this is going to be a problem all year. It's going to be uncomfortable all year, so you better do something. Now, does he win this battle and get what he wants, or do you think this is one where the Rockets are going to dig in and this might be something that takes a while?
Well, let's look at it this way. If I were the GM of the Rockets, if I were Rafael Stone right now, I was already trying to make moves to see what kind of value I can get in return for James Harden. I don't know what communication took place between James Harden and Rafael Stone and Tim Fertitta, the owner of the Houston Rockets. But you would hope that Rafael Stone would say, hey, look, help me help you. The more you can be here and be professional, the easier I can move you, because we can get something, you know, a massive return for your value. But it seems as if what's happening here, though, Alan, is that initial play by Tim Fertitta to change the head coach, to change the GM without consulting or even, you know, getting the perspective of James Harden really is what led this to crumble in the first place. And my thing is, it's not like James is hiding. You know, when Steve Silas said to him, the media earlier today, like, I don't know where James is at. James posted a picture of where he was at yeah. on Friday.
That's
to
funny.
The world.
Little baby.
To the world, man.
Getting that honey buns.
Exactly.
Phrasing.
And then there's stuff about him being in Vegas. So my thing is, this is a battle, and I feel like right now, the longer the battle exists, the more the Houston Rockets lose leverage place within the market for what kind of value they can get in return for James Harden.
Well, think of it this way, too. How many other teams, A, can take on the salary, B, can give them anything that, you know, that the Rockets would want here? It doesn't sound like the and here's the other thing. Obviously, the connection is Brooklyn, he and KD. It just seems like that's what they both want. And, you know, KD's being smart and the Nets are being smart. They're like, I don't know what you're talking about. We got our team. We're all set. Like, they have to do it that way, which they should. But this is what I think everybody feels like will be the end game. The problem is Brooklyn's going to need some help. Because there's no way that Houston really wants to have a package of Dinwiddie and LeVert and, you know, no draft picks. I mean, they're going to want draft picks. And they actually, from what I understand, would prefer, I'm giving you a superstar. I need a superstar in return. So you might have to find a third team here or something, don't you?
Yeah, you can find a third team to partake. Or, I mean, I don't know what all assets they have because I don't have everything in front of me. But, I mean, I still wouldn't discount Daryl Morey. Now, I know Daryl Morey left Houston to go to Philadelphia, but
yes.
And I know that he already came out and said, hey, we're sticking to Ben Simmons, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. But you got to think, if Daryl Morey had the opportunity with draft picks and capital to do a straight up swap between Ben Simmons and James Harden and some other pieces around, that he would probably do that. And that James Harden with Joel Embiid, with Danny Green, with, I mean, the pieces that they were able to get,
I know, I like
would be a pretty scary combination.
I completely. You've had that now. You brought that up weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, right? Like, this is a while that you brought that up.
First place my mind went to, because mm-hmm. I feel like Philly, like, look, people were wondering what kind of world can actually work between Ben Simmons and Joel. But it feels like with James, look, the one part that misses to Ben that would unlock Joel is his shooting.
Right.
So if you add that in the assist to James, I mean, that makes the job for Joel drastically different. It just makes it way more of a dual threat. It seems like it will work.
Pick and pop, especially, you know, like, he's really more that type of guy, even though he's got the size you'd think, oh, pick and roll. I think Embiid's more pick and pop than he is anything else. And that's perfect for James because, you know, if you're going to the basket, I don't need another guy crashing too. Now I got all these bodies in the paint. So I agree with you. I just think it's a good match there. What does it do now in the East? Because if he goes to the Nets, I've said, you might as well start stitching the banner. Like, there'll be no one in their way in the East, and they'll be so healthy, I mean, as far as, like, winning success, that they'll get to a finals and they'll have that belief, like, this is ours. That's how good I think they'd be with those three guys. But if he's not there and he goes to Philly, that really does change the East a lot. But I don't think it makes Philly the odds-on favorite like it would make the Nets the odds-on favorite. Do you agree or disagree?
You know, it's obviously, I think I would have the Nets because of the star power they have. I think the one interesting thing will be how Kyrie handles a lot of this year. Him and Kev, to be frank with you. You know, we've seen Kyrie decide not to partake in the media. Actually, contrary to other people's beliefs at ESPN, I kind of like the move for a minute. Even though the story becomes about Kyrie anyway, you know, I feel like Kyrie just removing himself from all media for a minute. You know, if he wants to get fined, he makes 33 point something million per year. Go ahead and fine him. I feel like the less Kyrie is involved in the media, the better off the team is, even though media won't like it. But to be frank with you, like, you know, you can't give a story or you can't say anything that could be used against you if you're not saying anything at all, if you turn into a Marshawn Lynch. And maybe that's what Kyrie turns into. But that's the only thing that you worry about between Kyrie and Kev and, you know, and that the way that unit works, right? Like, how would they react if something implodes a little bit internally? Could they handle that internally or does it become handled externally?
I've always felt this. I'm glad you went there because that's where I was going next with you, is the mentality that not just Kyrie, but I do think this is where we're trending in sports. You're a guy that had to deal with media on the other side. You had to deal with the everyday of talking to the writers. I was the guy that was on the other side. I was the guy in the scrum with the body odor and the sweat and the waiting and the camera on your shoulder and all that stuff. Like, I, you know, that's a different perspective, too. I was one of the things I don't miss at all about being a beat writer is I'm never in the scrum anymore. Hated being in the scrum. Hated it, right? It just was like demeaning in a way. Like, I'm standing around waiting for a guy to dress. We're all standing around him while he's dressing. And then we're going to wait for he answers some questions. And then he turns around. Like, it felt weird. Everything about it felt weird to me. So, but if you didn't get there, you weren't close enough to the player. You don't hear anything. So it was just the most bizarre thing. Anyways, I feel like what Kyrie's doing here, I'm with you. I don't have a problem with it. Now, I know he's got a responsibility and maybe he's showing some entitlement and all that stuff. People don't like the way it looks like. But what I'm saying is, fine, don't talk. I'll write it my way. You don't get to have your say if you don't want to talk, and that's fine. We're okay there. I'm with you too. Though sometimes the more he says, less is more with Kyrie. The more he says, the more crazy, you know, the more we all go crazy about it. Like, what did he say? Why would he say that? You know, we dissect it all. But don't you also think he has social media? He's got IG. He does a ton of stuff there. He's got social media. They've got podcasts. They've got their own media companies. Follow him around. They don't need the media anymore. And I feel like we're trending there. You got Players Tribune if you want to write something from the heart. I think stars are starting to make that point. I can connect to the fans on my own. I don't need you as the conduit anymore.
Look, Alan, I have a unique perspective on this, right? I was on the bottom floor with both Kev and Rich Kleiman, who kind of oversees all of his business for 35 Ventures, when they launched the Boardroom, right? And being a part of that. And seeing how they want to control the narrative, right? People forget that, as you know, this business is all about relationships, and you would know this, Alan. If you know, because you and I, and look, I haven't been a beat writer, but you know, I worked at ESPNU for 5 or 6 years. Like, I would, you know, spend time with college athletes, not pro athletes, and have to build relationships with coaches. And then all of a sudden, you're on your platform, and you say something about the coach, but then you have to see the coach the next week and have to sit down and talk with them. Like, things get awkward, right? So, and being on the player side, if I know, like, because I'm always scouring, I'm always on my phone, always scrolling through social media, I might see, you know, get alerts on my name, might read an article, but if I know you, if I see your face, and I know that you just wrote a debasing article about me, and then you come up to me and you try to be my friend, why the hell do I want to talk to you? Yeah. How could I not take that personally? So I think what players are doing now with 35 inches, with the boardroom, okay, Kevin has his own platform with his podcast. Hey, Kyrie, come on our podcast and talk about this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there might be some repercussions that you might have to deal with on the back end, but you've said what you feel, what you think. And by the way, at the end of the day, you have the right to come back and say, I don't feel comfortable with that, take that out. Or I feel comfortable with that, leave that in. Right? Like, that's how it works. J.J. Redick does it. Everybody does it.
Quentin Richardson does it. I think he does a great job with it. J.J.'s fantastic with his podcast, and I'm jealous of his pipes like I'm jealous of yours. You guys have great voices for it, too. So, like, but I think it's, like, you would have to admit, too, you probably have more of a comfort zone with somebody who played at least at a high level. Right? Like, you feel a little more relaxed. I'm talking to somebody that it gets my life, that understands it. Whereas, you know, the rest of us ink-stained wretches are sitting there. You know, we just ate McDonald's for lunch. You know, we're a mess. We've never really played anything. And you're talking to us, and you're like, you can't relate to me. You don't understand what I'm talking about. And I'm sure there's a difference there, too. I think there's a lot of guys that probably are more comfortable talking to people that can understand their perspective more as former athletes, which is why, for you, you're in such a great place doing what you're doing, because you can have that connection with athletes no matter what sport they play.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a unique place to be in, because, you know, an everyday fan, as much as you can have, like, you know, I had a take that, you know, like, I know Rich Paul very well. I know that they represent Chase Young. I've been a huge fan of Chase Young for a long time. I've been watching the Washington football team. I'm a diehard Eagles fan. I watch a lot of Washington football games. I knew that they were going to beat the Steelers just by the way that the Washington football team has played, right? Like, and I know a couple people inside that organization. Now, I know a lot of things that I could easily go on TV and say, but I choose to value those relationships.
Gotcha.
Right? So it's a delicate balance, Alan, of how do you pick your spots? Like, Kevin and I get in arguments. Other players and I get in arguments. But, like, I have a relationship with those guys where I get hit directly by them, and we talk it through. But there is a balance there, right? And, like, but I think it's not always what you say. I think how you say things is very important. Now, how you say something might not go viral because it's not as extreme, but it all depends upon what do you value more. Do you value going viral and then becoming somebody because of your viral hot takes? Or do you value those relationships where you're providing insight constantly to what they're thinking and how you think about it and how it all comes together?
So I think what matters is what's best for your business. Right?
Agreed.
If being the hot take guy is more important to you, or at least better for your business, because that's really in the end what this is about. Loyalty is what it is, but I've gone through it too with players where I've been loyal to guys and I've been careful what I say, and then next thing I know, you know, they're feeding someone else something and I didn't get it, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. So I've been leaving stuff in the notebook, and yet somebody else writes it, and it's like, well, that's your problem. It's your decision to leave the notebook. Like, oh, okay. So it does work both ways, Jay. That's why I think it's never going to mean, and what I said before about how players can control, you know, they have social media, they have all this stuff, they can control it. I don't think we're ever going to have a place where like mainstream media, newspapers and websites and TV, radio stations, all that stuff, like that's still valued, because there is, it's still genuine when you can have somebody critique. You know, if it's too cozy, you just know, well, he's taking it easy on him. It's a soft interview. Like, you still want to know that there's questions being asked that are tough questions that still need to be asked. You know what I mean? I still think that exists, but Kyrie, the problem is Kyrie's never going to be asked those tough questions. And that's also, I think, when he's thinking about himself and how he wants to avoid that, that's great. But there are people who are fans of his that do want to hear him answer those tough questions.
Yeah, but are those fans not going to stay fans of his because he doesn't answer them? Or, like, are you a fan of? I guess the question I have for a lot of people.
Well, you might lose respect for him, though, if he sidesteps something. You sort of feel like you're avoiding it, or you're going soft landing. Like, I don't respect that.
And I hear you, but dude, like, all I'm saying, Alan, is I'm not defending it. I'm just giving the alternate perspective on it. You ready? Kyrie Irving makes 33-something million dollars per year because he is a gift on the court. He's not making $33.6 million a year because he is exquisite at articulating his POV and he's always politically correct. right? Like,
yes.
We get paid to do that. We understand the gift of gab. We understand how I can ask you a question. And if you really didn't want to answer my question, Alan, you're so damn good at doing your job, you can answer my question away without ever answering my damn question.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie or some of these athletes who haven't been involved in media don't know how to do that, or maybe haven't practiced or had the reps at doing that at the rate that we have. So my thing is also it becomes a trap to a degree. And a lot of times, if you're not doing media on a day-to-day basis, if you're not familiar with the lay of the land, with all the different traps under the grass or in the hay, you don't know how to navigate that stuff. You don't know how to move. So you want me to be me. You want me to be authentic. But me being authentic is really complex, yeah. Right? Like you heard, like LeBron was authentic with Richard Jefferson on the Road Tripping podcast, mm-hmm. But he's also drinking and he's answering questions like you're talking in the locker room, right?
Yes.
Like, so it depends. Like, it depends on the person and it depends on the mood and it depends on the environment. But then it's a little bit frustrating for me because it does allow people to become a little bit hypocritical, right? Because, hey, like, you want eyeballs, like, Road Tripping Podcast wants eyeballs, right? That's how they increase their value. So you just can't get mad at the mechanism if you're feeling comfortable enough to say something, and then it becomes enhanced by all media, but it's also driving the bottom line for the entity that you've invested in. That's how you play the media game. That's the catch-22.
Yeah, that's right. It'll always be that way, no question. But, all right, so nationally, it was pretty clear that Kyrie took a lot of criticism for what he did, right? And it's usually, you know, it's funny. It's almost like we all, in the media, we cry to each other. Because I don't know how much fans really care about this stuff. They listen, they're interested because it's drama. But in the end, like, a fan's like, I don't know, I'll get his quote one way or another, so I could really care less. But in the media, we cry to each other about how this is an outrage, you know. But locally, Jay, there has not been the vitriol towards him about this. And I think that's also, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that also part of the beauty of him choosing the Nets in Brooklyn? Because it's so much more subdued. What they do, it's sort of you look up for a minute and go, what is he doing? Oh, that's weird. And then it's like, all right, what else is going on? And meanwhile, and I know people are going to say, oh, you're a Knicks guy, you're doing this, but I'm going to say it. If he had chosen the Knicks, this would be back page, over the top, hot take, anger, vitriol, all that stuff. It would not stop. About another game, he doesn't talk. Another game, we'll have to go to his IG to see what he thought about that play. Like, that's something I think if he was wearing a Nick jersey, which I always say is the heaviest jersey in the league, it would be a much different thing, which is why going to the Nets makes all kinds of sense for him on every level, including this one. He had to know this was coming.
Well, I think maybe a small part of him did slightly think about that. I actually think that has more to do, like, I'm from Jersey, man. Like, he's from Jersey, went to St. Patrick's High School. Like, I went to another high school 20 minutes away from him. Like, I turned down an opportunity to go to Houston when I was coming back from my injury because I wanted to be a Net. Like, it's in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I want to rep my city. So for him, it's always been a dream to be a Net. I kind of really respect that. And I also can say this about Kai. I think Kai is a very polarizing individual. But Alan, you know this. If you've ever spent time with Kyrie and there's not a microphone in his face, man, you'll walk away like, damn, I love Kyrie, man. He's a cool dude. He's relaxed. He's low-key. He's an introvert. He thinks outside the box. Like, he's always standing up for people who's oppressed. You know what he's done in the community around Brooklyn? Do you know how much, not only money, but of his time he's dedicated to a lot of the kids and how he's kind of fought against the people who are oppressed? So I understand, like, this narrative builds only in the media where we really want to recite all the things that Kyrie has said as crazy, or Earth is flat, or mm-hmm. You know, you did this about LeBron, or who else are you posting? But man, like, when you start looking, you know, under all the BS up top, that honestly, how much BS do we get fed on a day-to-day basis, man? I forgot what happened last week, damn it. Right? Like, and I know,
you're not wrong.
The log of stuff with Kyrie now, but at the end of the day, though, if they win a championship, are you going to spend time complaining about the fact he didn't talk to the media on December 8th? No, you're not.
Yeah.
You're like, yo, we were a chip in Brooklyn, him and Katie, they brought it home. Like, at the end of the day, winning is what matters. And if you win, everything else takes care of itself, man.
Usually does. That's exactly it. It usually does. I'll tell you what, though, as much as it always sounds like I criticize him, I've always talked about him as one of the most, you know, compelling point guards there is in the game. And I loved Uncle Drew. I loved that movie. Like, I really did. I loved that movie. I know he obviously had a lot to do with the movie and how it was presented and everything else and the characters. So it just shows you his creativity. So there's a lot there. There's a lot there to like. But it is, I still, why I brought it up with you is obviously I know your intimate knowledge, but also your experience. And I just feel like his move here, I'm with you. I didn't get upset about it. I looked at it and said, I've been waiting for this to happen, and I've been waiting for somebody to take that step. He's the one doing it. Now I wonder, does the league dare to do anything about it? Can the league say, no, no, you have to talk to the media via Zoom, you know, at least whatever it is, once a week or, you know, every other game or whatever it is. You can't not do that stuff. Does the league step in and do that? Because if they don't, what's stopping the next superstar from saying, well, if Kai doesn't have to do it,
let me ask you this question, Alan. So say I'm Kyrie. Ask me some tough questions. And like, so now I'm being forced to come to the podium. You tell me what you like more. Go to ask me a tough question.
A tough question? Like, you got to give me a scenario.
Ask me any question that you ask Kyrie.
That I would ask him, like, right now, like, if it was preseason, like, right now, what would I ask him?
Yeah, ask me. I'm Kyrie. Let's play. Okay. Let's do role play.
Okay. Well,
amazing.
You said you wanted a head coach, but you said you didn't want a coach, that you wanted somebody that you could relate to. So when you're practicing, how much of it is Steve Nash running the practice versus how much is practice just happening organically with him overseeing it?
Well, Steve Nash, our head coach, is the one that said this is going to be a collaborative effort. So we're all working together.
Yeah, that's the nice vanilla answer, which is the easiest thing to do.
I guess my thing that I try to show there, an example, is, okay, so if I do come to the podium,
I'm saying,
and you are allowed to ask me questions, and I give you short answers,
right?
Like, what does that do for you?
I agree.
Right? Like, I still think people will say, well, he's not answering stuff. He doesn't like the media. The narrative still twists. It still turns.
I know. Like, you can't win. Jay, that's my whole point. That's my whole point. We sit in this smelly scrum waiting for you to finally come out. When you do, you've got a look on your face like, I don't want to be here. Every question you answer is a standard monotone answer. You walk away, and so it's like, all right, that's the availability. That's what you wanted. And we're like, he didn't say anything, and he looked miserable. I hate him. Like, it's just, you can't win. You're right. So you either don't talk and get criticized, or talk and give them nothing and get criticized.
So we're talking and be yourself and be authentic and get criticized.
Oh, well, and then there's the last part, which, right, is just relax and just have fun with it, which some guys do. And because you're not, you know, you're not a guy that cracks jokes. You're not a guy that, you know, has that kind of personality. So, again, we're not eating out of your hand. We're not, you know, writing down every quote because it's gold and you just wrote us our story. Because, oh, by the way, there's a secret too, Jay. Is that really, what does a beat writer want, especially during training camp? I want somebody that's going to write my story for me so I don't have to try hard.
Exactly.
I want write my story so I'm done by one so I can get on the golf course before the day's over.
I love
share that with your friends.
It's of how you operate, Adam. I love it.
Hey, it's always great to talk to you, Jay. Thanks so much. Have a great week.
You too, brother.
All right.
Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.